Joining us on our morning show is author Paula Morehart. Good to talk to you, Paula. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. It's good to have someone talk about my books.
Well, we love to do that. We love to promote authors, local authors. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Paula, if you would.
I'm a 68-year-old great-grandmother. I started writing when I was 9 years old. I still have that story. It's a piece of lined paper written on in pencil about my falling into this giant hole, and there was all kinds of monsters. It was just ridiculous. I've had several things had been published in magazine, and then in November of 2017, my husband died unexpectedly, and my mother passed away the next morning, and I started keeping a journal of that year of being a widow, being on my own, not having mom to give me advice. And I self-published that one on Amazon, along with another one I wrote a little bit later, the poems. The first one was called Widow's Walk. The second one was Widow's Tears of Sorrow. And I had a publisher from Fox Point Publishing up in Minneapolis get hold of me, and she said, "Do you have any more?" I said, "Oh, yeah, I have quite a few." So I've got poetry books out, 3 books of poetry, along with the 2 from Amazon. I have 4 books of memoir cookbooks. They've got stories in and then recipes from my grandmother, great-grandmother, etc. And 7 children's books. This fall it will be 8. And then the one that I am the most proud of is the one that just came out. It's the first mystery I've ever written. It's Domesticated Ferals, the mystery. And domesticated ferals are not cats. They are people. Everybody asks me that one.
Oh, okay. Where was the inspiration for that one from?
You know, I wrote a poem, and it just, domesticated ferals, for some reason, popped into my head. So I wrote this poem, and then I wrote a second one. So it was Domesticated Ferals Part 1 and Domesticated Ferals Part 2, and I thought, you know, they really are the beginning and the end of a story. So I wrote some more poems to go with it, and it was just still not quite what I needed. So then I wrote, there's medical reports and scientific journal reports, journal entries, all kinds of things in between each poem. And then just to make it so that, you know, make it more difficult or whatever, I have photographs in there as well, and every photograph, poem, and story is a chapter. Each one, there's 13 chapters, and every single one of them has clues. Even the photographs have clues in them, and so that you can figure out who, what, where, when, why, and how. But then when you get done, the biggest question you have to ask yourself is, are we the before people, or are we the after people?
Interesting. I think everybody loves a good mystery, don't they?
Yeah, I think so. I do not tell you the answer, and that's because there can be several answers depending on how you look at the clues. So I think it's a good book for discussion, for one thing.
Could you see this being made into a movie someday?
Oh, wow. Yeah, my publisher has already brought that up, and I think it would be... it would be excellent in like one of those Twilight Zone and things where they have brief little snippets of different movies, and the overall theme is the same, but each little scene or whatever you want to call it is different. And that's kind of the way it would be with this book, too, I think.
How do you write, Paula? Do you have a set time, like today I'm going to write from 9 to 5, or just whenever it inspires you?
I write every morning, for sure. And lately I've been writing every afternoon as well, trying to get these books out. I do have a large container here by my desk, and inside I have little pieces of paper with topics on them. And if I'm stuck and I just cannot write, I will grab something out of there and force myself to write at least 2 paragraphs about whatever that is. It might be mushrooms, trees, little child crying, something that I will write at least 2. And a lot of times when I'm stuck, when I'm at a story and I'm stuck, I'll grab one of those papers out And, you know, while I'm working on that, my brain is busy working on the first one. And there you have it. By the time I'm done with the, yes, I have to do this, I can get back to the, I really want to do this part.
Do you write some by longhand or how do you write?
Yes. I have notebooks in just about every room of my house and my purse and my van. I prefer to write longhand first because I get so many ideas going through my head and I need to switch them up and move them around. And I can do that I end up with arrows and little boxes, but it makes sense to me. And then I can put it on the computer. If I put it on the computer at first, right off the bat, it just seems too permanent. It's like, I know there's a lot of editing that has to happen, and I would just as soon do it, get as good as I can on paper, and then get it typed into the computer. And then one of the things my publisher told me to do, which has been an absolute wonderful asset, she said, read it aloud to yourself. Not just to yourself, but read it aloud. And I was amazed at the number of things I caught after having gone through the whole manuscript. And I'd swear I got everything. But in reading it aloud and listening to myself, I found three or four other things that were wrong. So that was a really good piece of advice.
You talked about your journey as a widow and that tough year you had. Was it therapy for you to be writing at that time?
It was. I started a blog online with this, and I wrote in it every single day because I just, what the day entailed. Because there's a thing about grief. You can have a piece of paper. You can have a pen or a pencil in your hand. You can have that pen or pencil on the paper, and you think of something, and you go to write it down, and it's gone. It's that fast. And so I started making little notes, little bits and pieces of notes, and then piece them all together and would put them all together each day at the end of the day and write in my blog. And I made it public, and I had a couple of people that contacted me. This one lady, she contacted me, and she said, it's wonderful. It's helping me so much. And I thought, well, I told my sister that, and she said, well, you should write it. You should publish it. And I said, no. And later that week, I received a card from one of my readers who had taken the time to find my name and address, had taken the time to fill out a card and stick it in the mail and send it to me to tell me how much I had helped her with that blog. And it wasn't anything special. It was just me getting through each day. And that's what they were looking for. And I can understand that because it's really hard. There is no way to describe losing your spouse. There's just no way.
You've written children's books. Does your family enjoy them?
Yes, very much so. My first picture book that I wrote, which is called This is the Bear, my great-grandson DJ absolutely loves. He's down in Virginia, and my granddaughter has read it to him so often that when we video chat each week, he can read it to me. And he's not quite five, so.
That's pretty impressive, actually.
It's a lot of fun. And the other one, This is the Bear, also has a tiny little mouse hidden in every illustrated spread. And so kids get to look for the mouse as well as read along with the story. And Peggy McDonald did an awesome job on the illustrations for that. I do not do illustrations. I just do the word part. The picture part somebody else does for me. I have trouble with stick people.
But do you have in your mind, though, what the illustration should look like?
Yes. We're working on my illustrator, Kayla, is working with me now. We've got one coming out. I've got one coming out this fall that will be the fourth in the Gray Valley series of books that I have, and it's about Flutterbys. And so we had to come to an agreement on, number one, what the caterpillars were going to look like, and then what their little cocoons would look like, and then what the flutterbys would look like. And my publisher just kind of threw up her hands because she said, well, butterflies is F-L-I-E-S. And I said, no, they're not butterflies. They're flutterbys. They flutter Bayou. It's FLUTTERBYS, Flutterbys. So we got that little thing, and that helped Kayla as well, because I said they flutter. Like, and I was trying to think of something, and I said, think of a Luna moth only with fluttery. Is that? So then she sent me some samples, and I okayed them. We figured out a way to do the caterpillars, and I okayed them, and she's now working on getting the book finished up, which should be out this fall.
Can people get your books? I said you currently have 17 out there. Are they still all in print?
Yes, they are. You can go to booksbypaulamorehart.com. That's my website. You can also go to Fox Point Publishing and look under the authors, and my picture will be there, and that will give you a link to my website. If you're in Richland Center, you can contact me by email at author.paula.morehart@gmail.com. I had to think. And send me an email. And if you're in Richmond Center, we can always meet and exchange cash and book, and that way you don't have to pay shipping.
Oh, that works out really well. It seems like there are a number of authors in the area. We've had them on our program before. But do you find this area being, you know, kind of stimulating to you for ideas as a writer?
It is. I just moved up here 3 years ago. I spent 65 years of my life down in Illinois, so it's a bit of a shock. I do have some friends up in this area, and I needed to get away because we had 2 acres, and my husband died. It was a little much for me to take care of, and I was taking care of Dad, and my boys were kind of taking care of me, and we got my dad moved into town next to my brother, and I'm like, okay, now I have to be on my own now. So moving up here is another whole adventure for me, because this is the first time I've been on my own. I had to figure out, you know, where can I get my oil changed? Who can I trust? What plumber is really good that I can trust? And things like that, that down below I knew right off the bat. But up here, I don't. I have to start from scratch. So it's been very interesting.
Sure. Yeah, it's kind of like a new chapter, isn't it?
Yes, it is exactly like that.
Domesticated Ferals, the book, you said that this one is one of the ones you're most proud of. Why would you say that?
I worked on it for 5 years, but this is some of the best writing I have ever done. This one and the children's books are available on Ingram. I wanted to get that out there, too. But this one, it's got so many different aspects. There's one chapter that people are going to be really confused by until they get to the end, because at the end, the very last paragraph explains the entire chapter. It's just such a very mixed medium, of course, because I have photographs, I have poems, and I have different prose, different parts prose. So it's a very much a mixed genre. Even though it's a mystery, it's kind of a mixed mystery. And I think people are really going to like it simply because it's simple to read, kind of, until you really get into it and you realize you need to read it again. And it's very good for discussions. I think it would be excellent for a book club because everybody's going to have their own opinion on who did what and why and when and where. And the why is one of the obvious Easter eggs. I will say that. People will understand it when they see it.
Interesting. Do you ever go to classes and speak with young people about writing and books?
I have in the past. Like I said, I've only been up here 3 years, so I'm just really getting, the first year was spent getting moved in and being ill. I'm just really starting to learn all the different people and everything. I was in winter market vending all winter, and that was good because, number one, it got me out of the house, but number two, I got to meet a lot of different people and discuss books with a lot of different people. I am like most authors in that I would just as soon just stay back in the shadows, sit in my house and watch people. I've got a window where I can watch people go by. And that's what authors do. We're people watchers. We collect little things and little pieces of words that we hear people say that we think, you know, oh, that's really good. We have people living in our heads, which we don't tell the doctors about.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. It's not those people. But they do. We've all got characters. The very last story in Domesticated Ferals, I wasn't sure how to end the book. What did I want to finish the book with. 3 a.m., I sat straight up in bed. I said, that's it. Come tearing out here to the computer and wrote it all out. Yes, I needed to do a little edits in the morning, but I got the main whole gist of what I had just sprang into my head. And that happens, which is why I have notebooks scattered all over, too, to write little notes and things down. But that is one of the reasons, because I work so hard on it, and it is some of the best writing I have ever done. And I'm very proud of this book. I'm happy I got all the rest of them, but I'm very proud of this one.
And will there be a follow-up to this book someday?
I'm working on the research because I would like to do Domesticated Ferals, the history. And it would be the history of the earth. And it's been coalescing in my head. So hopefully it won't be another 5 years. I do have that one children's book coming this fall. And then the fifth in that series, the fifth and final book, will be coming out next year. So I've got those going on in my head, too.
I'm not a writer, but I do some, you know, blogs and things like that. Do you ever find yourself thinking, I wonder what my high school English teacher would think? You know, I'm not using the right adjectives and things like that. Do you ever see that see that in your head?
Yeah. When I was in junior high, I gathered my courage up and I went to the high school English teacher and I gave her a story I had written. It was ridiculously stupid. It was just a really bad thing to be from start to finish. Luckily, she didn't laugh at me. She did put a lot of red ink on it. And then she said, you should perhaps rethink this whole idea of writing stories. So I'm hoping she's looking down going, oh, I was wrong.
Yeah. Constructive criticism is good, though, sometimes.
Yes.
Absolutely. From here, I mean, do you set goals for yourself? You talked about the next book or the follow-up and things like that, but do you have a goal like, I'd like to get this done in the next 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, I would like to write another book. I've got one book called Tears of Pain, Tears of Sorrow, One Mother's Story, and it's the first 25 years of our marriage. It starts when I was 17 and pregnant and goes until we had our second grandchild. And it's fun to read because at the very beginning, the poems are very simple and childlike because I was 17. But you can tell my writing gets better as you go on. And I was always going to do a second 25 years. Obviously, I couldn't do that because he's no longer with me. But I have thought about doing a second 25 years and putting that part in there because that was part of my life as being a mother and a woman as well.
Do you think we all have a book in us, Paula, if we actually sat down and applied ourselves?
Yeah. I think everyone has a story. Everyone has a story that belongs to just them. It's because of their experiences. Even if you have someone with you and it's a shared experience, you're still going to experience it differently. So everyone has a story. Whether they have a book or not, that is up to them. I mean, everybody's story is interesting. If you learn how to write it down, and even if you just write it down for your grandchildren, your grandchildren may be fascinated by it. My grandmother was just horrified when I started doing foraging classes because I was foraging for food they had to eat during the Depression. And she could not imagine, you know, something like that. And so that was a story that I was able to hear from her about their times of living during the Depression and what they had to go through and kind of carry it forward to me now where I liked those foods that back then was just what the poorest of the poor ate. Well, now we can go out and forage for that stuff because we realize how good it is. Mm-hmm. But I think everybody has that story inside of them. And I really wish younger people, and maybe even some of my boomer generation, if you've got grandparents left, talk to them. Listen to their stories.
Right.
Write them down if you possibly can. Because, yeah, everyone has a book. We're all full of stories. We got a lot of chapters in us.
Yeah, and I've said that before. I think it's kind of a lost art because I used to love to sit and listen to stories about the Depression or World War II and how things were and how tough they were. I don't know. The kids don't have the attention span to sit down and hear our stories sometimes, I don't think.
No, they don't. And it doesn't, they just can't figure out how it relates to them now.
Right.
I think.
How can people get your books again? How can people contact you and, moving forward here, Paula?
They can reach me at author.paula.morehart@gmail.com. They can go to Fox Point Publishing, and Fox Point, it's point has an E at the end, foxpointpublishing.com, and click on my author page on there, or you can go to booksbypaulamorehart.com and order them directly from my website. And you get a signed copy when you order from my website.
Awesome. Domesticated Ferals, the brand new book, Paula Morehart. Come back and talk with us again when you get another book out.
Certainly, I will do that. Thanks, Phil.
Author Paula Morehart joining us here from WRCO in Richland Center.